art.
Jackalopes explore strange cryptids.
My big question for the squonk is, if it's so sad, how do they reproduce?
Maybe they reproduce by budding.
Don't look at me.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Reproduce like by budding. A little mole?
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
Like nasty a gremlin. Mole?
I think okay. you got yeah. it.
Nice.
So but not voluntarily. They're around just because they can't help it.
Yes. Hmm. Yeah.
They want to end their existence. They just keep procreating all of this.
Jackalopes Explore on the podcast page at SheridanMedia.com.
The following message is presented by Century 21 BHJ, 101 South Main.
Hi, this is Claudia Colnar with the Sheridan Arts Council. Join us for a free fundraising concert for the award-winning piano violin duo Tanner and Caroline Jordan. They are on their way to Juilliard and the Manhattan School of Music, respectively, this fall. We hope to see you on Wednesday, August 6th at 7:30 at the First Baptist Church, 3179 Bighorn Avenue, for a memorable evening of beautiful music by these talented musicians.
So how did you make your first $1 million?
Well, on average, people spend $147 billion a year on dog accessories.
Oh, so you have a designer doggy clothing line.
No, that market is saturated. I started a designer clothing line for fish. I call it Get Your Bassin Gear.
Brilliant. Designer clothing gear for fish.
Yes, now it's a multi-million-dollar year industry. People take photos of their fish in my design.
Oh, they can submit those photos to the Fish Your Bass Off photo contest at SheridanMedia.com.
Yes, on the contest page, you can enter now through Labor Day, and the winner will get $300 from Connect Home Center, $300 from Century 21 BHJ Realty.
Indeed. Everyone should get their bassin gear.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Aaron Palmer.
Good morning and welcome to Public Pulse, 930 AM and 103.9 FM, KROE. Aaron Palmer filling in for Floyd Whiting this week, who's off playing and having fun.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to do that once in a while.
Well, you know, I guess they figured he deserved it. So they let him go. But yeah, he's off having fun. He'll be back next week. Joining me this morning on part one of Public Pulse is Lieutenant Daniel Keller and Chief Travis Koltiska with the Sheridan Police Department. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good. Okay. You've got a slew of things that we need to cover today, so I'm just going to introduce you and let you go with what you have to speak about. What do you got going on?
Well, you know, once in a while, we like to kind of talk about philosophy on here. Oftentimes, okay. We get into the nuts and bolts of what goes on, day-to-day activities, stuff like that. But, you know, one thing that anybody's been in this industry for any period of time knows a name out there called a gentleman by the name of Sir Robert Peel. He was the head of the London Metropolitan Police Department in the early 1800s. And in 1829, he came up with basically three principles of modern policing that are still followed by almost every law enforcement agency to this day. So you think back, we're talking almost 200 years ago. And call him the father of modern policing kind of seems strange when you're talking 200 years ago. But he really put these philosophies and these principles in place that can really stand the test of time. In this industry, technology changes day to day anymore. I mean, it seems like there's always something new on the horizon. And we as an agency need to adapt to technologies, both because it creates efficiencies, because bad actors are gaining technology, so we have to counter those. But when it comes down to the core principles and the core ideas of policing, these things are still something that we follow to this day. And so, you know, we've touched on some of these in the past, but we've kind of wanted to touch on a couple of those principles this morning.
Okay.
You know, principle one, and it reads verbatim, is to prevent crime and disorder as an alternative to the repression by military force and severity of legal punishment. And you know, like you think about a lot of the policing before that time was, I mean, if you go way back, you're talking about the old Shire Reef, the precursor to the sheriff. You talk, most of crime suppression was done through militaries, governmental militaries. And then when you start talking policing, so there's some references to repression of military force and legal punishment. But principle one, in essence, is you know, the goal that we have day to day is to prevent crime. That's our, right. It's one of our overarching goals and one of our core principles that we follow at the Sheridan Police Department. And through that prevention, it's much more of a holistic approach to policing. It's not, you know, catching criminals, well, that's a function because we can't prevent all crime. But if we can stop crime before it happens, you know, one, we don't have a victim, so it reduces victimization of our community members. And there's also not the punishment or suppression of individual rights who have committed a violation of law. And so, yeah, that's our goal. And we try to accomplish crime prevention through many, many ways. And Lieutenant Keller in the operations division, who's in charge of patrol activities, really implements strategies to target crime prevention and how we try to accomplish just this core idea and this core principle that is, you know, we look at successes. A lot of, you know, we monitor our activities. We monitor individuals, officers and dispatchers and their performance. And it's not stat driven. It's not like we're trying to see how many we can get of X or how many we can get of Y. And that's not, if we have a high arrest rate, that's not success as a police department, because that means crime's happening. It's when we have a low crime rate, that's successful. And if you look, Sheridan, we are very, very fortunate to have a very low crime rate. And we owe that to the community we live in. We're very fortunate to live here, but also at the same time, really putting these ideas and these principles in place. And I'll let Lieutenant Keller talk about, you know, some of the things that we do in order to try to accomplish that mission.
Yeah. Yeah, probably nothing more. You know, the principle we're talking about here is preventing crime, not just catching criminals. As Chief Koltysko alluded, that doesn't mean we don't want to catch criminals, because that can prevent a lot of crimes. We had a recent string of car burglaries. And, you know, we caught the individuals doing that. So that obviously prevented a bunch of future crimes. So sure, they're not working against each other, working with each other. Like Chief alluded to, we don't want to just count stats. We don't want to just say, hey, we arrested a bunch of people, so that's good. We want officers making the right arrests for the right reasons and knowing why they're making those arrests. We'd always much rather make an arrest for a public intox than that person go home and get in a fight and beat somebody up, you know. So low level arrests are really important, and to know what kind of activities have a high propensity to turn into greater crime. So we want officers being active in those. But having officers active and seen in the community is really important. That's really our first level of defense, so to speak.
I was going to ask that. So yeah.
Yeah. Hey,
go ahead. Sorry.
So a couple, like, we look for things that intersect, right? We look, when do a lot of traffic accidents happen? Where's a lot of shoplifting happening? And how can we do traffic enforcement where those things are happening? When do most DUI arrests happen? So we try to get officers every month. I measure and I show the sergeants, hey, here's what percentage of your officers' traffic stops were made during the times when most accidents happen. So again, we don't want to just say an officer did a great job because he made 10,000 traffic stops. It's like, hey, was he thoughtful? Was he making them at the right time, at the right places, where the most people are going to see him? Because, you know, you make a traffic stop on Coffeen, you're affecting that driver, but also you're affecting the, you know, 300 or 400 people are going to drive by you in 5 minutes and see you. So, yeah, being visible in the community, looking professional, acting professional, that's really one of the most important foundations of preventing crime.
I was alluding to that, or going to, is that, and there's no way to track this, but is there, in your opinion, just the presence of having a police officer in you were saying this, does that really affect crime? I mean, or the lack of, I guess, by the community seeing that there are police officers, say, stationed on Coffeen Avenue or wherever, blah, blah, blah. Is that, there's no way to track that, but I'm sure that that's probably what you guys are seeing.
You know, I'm really into stats and studies and numbers, probably to a fault.
Okay.
Chief laughed at me here. But yes, that is very tough to quantify. But what's not tough to quantify is, you know, I tell people what we're selling is, if we're a business, what we're selling is making people feel safe. Mm-hmm. So what is for certain, if you're a citizen and you see the police, and you see them active in your community, and you know they've arrested criminals, and when you talk to them, they come across as noble and professional and well-groomed, all those things,
right,
you definitely feel safer. So that's an important part of that presence that we know works for sure. Yeah, and there's some anecdotal common sense that, yeah, if I see a cop, I'm less likely to want to commit a crime, at least at that time, right?
And they're not necessarily crimes. I mean, even traffic infractions, anything like that.
Yeah.
I was going to say that the few times that I've had interactions with police of any sort, a couple with Sheridan, very professional, very, you know, accommodating, blah, 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 whatever. They're not, you know, there's not an attitude in any of it. I've been very, I don't want to say very lucky, but, you know, some people will say, well, you know, the police treated me, blah, blah, blah. I've never experienced that, ever.
That's an incredible segue into our second philosophy. I don't know if you planned that or not.
No.
Our second core idea is...
Lucky accident.
And I've said this before, but public support is and public trust is key in our ability to do our job effectively. Mm-hmm. If you don't trust the police, you're less likely to report your own victimization of a crime. And that's unfortunately something that has happened across the nation and in the industry before, is that individuals don't... They're more scared to report a crime because they're more afraid of the police than they are of actually what occurred to them and how they were victimized. It really comes down to building that common trust within the community, knowing that how we interact and how we engage and it's, you know, building that community support really helps us impact victimization of crime on a greater level. You know, we're fortunate here in Sheridan, and the things we've experienced in recent years, starting with COVID, going all the way through, is our community. The community support we've received has been is always phenomenal. It does not to say it's 100%. There's always the naysayers out there, usually through their own actions, not ours. But you know, I think a lot of it is Sheridan is still a community in general. It's as large as it's gotten. It's still a community, and they share. They understand that it's a shared responsibility to prevent crime within our city. We do have people that come forward to report suspicious activities that oftentimes leads to the identification of a crime that occurred and identification of an offender. And without that ownership, that it's our responsibility as a community as well, it just makes it a little more challenging. We oftentimes solicit the community's help, and we get great responses in it. And so I think that's key. You know, it's if it was just cast upon our shoulders, it would be a much heavier lift. And that's, we're very fortunate in that respect. So keeping that, maintaining that professionalism, maintaining that I tell every new officer that I hire that, you know, your actions every day dictate the ability for our department as a whole to do our job effectively for the community and provide that level of service that it deserves. And to do everything you can to maintain that community trust. Again, there's stumbles. Sometimes we don't do things exactly how people think they should be done. But I can tell you, the intention is always there, and it's always in the right area.
Well, I think for the most part, you know, the police officers, at least in Sheridan and in Buffalo, I guess, are that way. You know, they do a very good job. Sure, there might be somebody that, you know, like you said, kind of looks at that and goes, well, it could have been handled better. Well, okay. But I think every circumstance is different. But I think an example, if you're pulled over for a traffic infraction, if you're going to get lippy and whatever else, you know, then, you know, police are human beings, are going to react accordingly.
Yeah. And we tell people we're used to oftentimes know and understand where we interact with people that could be having the worst day of their life ever. But that person doesn't know what we just dealt mm-hmm. with. They don't know what we just saw or had to do. And so sometimes it's a hard profession. It's a hard job, and it impacts. We are human, and I don't think anybody out there wants us to not be human, right? So we have to have that human side, and it impacts us and the things we see day to day. You know, I've heard it said that on average, the average person experiences what's classified as a traumatic incident 2 to 3 times in their entire life, and for police officers, it's 600 to 800.
No doubt.
So just that kind of speaks volumes of what we are. So, but yeah, I mean, and you know, we do this through the professionalism, through transparency. If people have questions about how and why we do things, we get on here twice a month to explain it. Our phone number's easy to remember, 3 digits. Don't call 911 to ask a question. I'm just kidding. But you know, we will gladly tell you why we do the things that we do.
I think that's one thing that the community members need to kind of keep in the back of their mind is that, you know, cooperating with an officer in any situation is probably the best choice. You know, seriously. And a lot of people forget that, you know, and then they have the, then they, after the fact, go, well, you know, I was treated such and such. Well, you might have brought that on yourself.
Yeah, I always tell people, we are as nice as people let us be. That's the goal. Exactly. But that's, you know, it's what we're talking about, these principles. And we want to be a principle-driven agency, a value-driven agency. Because there are times we're going to mess up or we're having a bad day or the citizen's having a bad day. And if you try to govern those with specific rules, it just becomes complicated. So we want to have the right values driving us, and that's what we try to teach people.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break and come back. Joining me this morning in part one, Lieutenant Daniel Keller and Chief Travis Koltiska, Sheridan Police Department. We'll be back right after this.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to Volunteers of America.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit eFirstFederal.bank, member FDIC.
So I told my wife I'd made a doctor's appointment. She said, which doctor? I said, no, medical. I believe in science, not superstition. Well, the same goes for you fixing or tuning up your own 4x4, side-by-side, or lawnmower. Because it don't need voodoo, it needs a professional. At Hando's, they don't burn sage, they burn midnight oil. So remember, it ain't a spiritual journey, it's a tune-up. And you need to get that machine to Hando Service Center on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Up where the air is thin and the pines whisper secrets, there's a place called Spiro Wigwam, 30 miles up the Red Grade, at 8,300 feet in the heart of the Bighorns, where the trail calls to those with a cowboy soul. Saddle up for half-day or all-day guided horseback rides. Perfect for families, first-timers, even the seasoned cowhand. So experience the way the West was meant to be, horseback. Call Spiro Wigwam or go online at SpiroWigwam.com to come ride where the trails touch the sky.
It's the dog days of summer, and your pup is living their best life. From belly flops in the creek to chilling in the shade, our four-legged friends know how to savor the season. Enter a photo of your dog living their best summer life on our Dog Days of Summer photo contest. Online now at SheridanMedia.com. Presented by All Around Canine, Country Pet Inn, and Mandy Koltiska with Century 21 BHJ Realty. The winner by most votes will get $500 in chamber bucks and a gift certificate to Country Pet Inn. Enter on the contest page at SheridanMedia.com.
Welcome back to Public Pulse on 930 AM and 103.9 FM. KROE, Aaron Palmer in for Floyd Whiting this week. Joining me on part one of Public Pulse is Lieutenant Daniel Keller and Chief Travis Koltiska with the Sheridan Police Department. And we're talking about these core ideas, I guess, core principles, is that what they are, about police work?
Yeah, our core ideas, philosophies that are based on the, you know, Sir Robert Peel's nine principles of modern policing.
Okay, and we went through number two, so I guess we're on to number three. Is that where we're at?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I guess, and for philosophy-wise, you know, our public support, our job, we talked about our job being contingent on public support, but that's also by respecting community principles.
Okay.
And understanding that we derive our power through consent of the people. And that means that if there's changes, you know, in the system that we work, laws are always changing based off of community standards, norms, and principles, you know, within the communities that we live in, whether it's at a federal level, a state level, or even a local level. And so it's about following those principles of the community, not our own personal standards, our own personal beliefs or opinions, right? We have to share that common community principle in order to be effective, because that means we're going to respect those ideas and work within the parameters of our job to help accomplish the principles within the community. You know, it's hard work. You know, we have to build a solid reputation and be impartial in our enforcement of any laws or even our interactions, right? Impartiality and non-biased and all that is very crucial and key in how we operate day to day. And it starts, number one, with hiring. And we have a very high standard that we have for hiring of our officers. We will maintain that even in times when we have had troubles keeping our staffing levels adequate. I'm going to say appropriate. I'd say adequate. It's been a challenge. And it's a nationwide deal, and it's no different here in Sheridan. But really, we won't lower our standards to fill a seat. It's about we have to have the highest character individual that also represents the community principles and the community values and is going to maintain that reputation for the department. So that's something we've really focused on. And it's caused some sleepless nights trying to figure out how I'm going to adequately staff a department that isn't too taxing on those that are here and causing burnout and causing issues with them. There for a while, we had to have, even in our dispatch center, having dispatchers work off on their 3 days off, having to work two of those days off, some of them to cover vacancies. And it's hard. That's hard on a person when you're talking a 12-hour rotating shift schedule. It's hard. So, But they've done it.
Yeah.
And maybe not willingly, but they understand the need to do it. But, you know, back to the community, it's really about... we always solicit feedback. We always solicit comments on how we do. We do often do just reviews of job performance of all the staff that are within our agency, and we're always trying to make ourselves better. It's not for punishment. It's to make ourselves better.
Okay. Let's run through the rest of these real quick. We got a few minutes left. We can run through these.
Sure. Quickly. So I already read the first principle one, to prevent crime and disorder. Principle two says to recognize always that the power of the police to fulfill their function and duties is dependent on public approval of their existence, action, and behavior, and on their ability to secure and maintain public respect. So that kind of goes back to what we were talking about, those community principles that we have, and that's how we can fulfill our functions in our community. Principle three says to recognize always that to secure and maintain and respect maintain the respect and approval of the public means also securing the willing cooperation of the public in the task of securing observance to laws. Kind of goes back to one of those other philosophies working cooperatively with our community. It's not an us versus them. You know, we are in this together. We all live in this community. We all love this community. I want my kids to be extremely safe. I want them to drive down the road and know that people are adhering to traffic laws and driving safely as well, so they're not in danger. Principle four, to recognize always that the extent to which the cooperation of the public can be secured diminishes proportionally the necessity of the use of physical force and compulsion for achieving police objectives. You know, that's one we talk on a lot, but, you know, our standard use of force is the minimum amount of force reasonable and necessary under the circumstances to accomplish a legitimate police objective. Meaning we react to the level of resistance that's given to us. Sometimes we have to elevate that based on the actions of the individual that we're trying to arrest or control, even just in a control situation. And that's why there's a lot of review of any use of force incidents within our organization. Anytime there's a use of force above a certain level, which is basically open hands, which means just kind of a escort technique, it triggers an automatic review, and supervisors review those each and every time to make sure that use of force was proportionate and equal to the standards that we have set forth. And so that's a big one right now. Excessive use of force is something that we just won't tolerate.
Right.
And we'll take that even a step further. You can look at any individual use of force and go, well, that makes sense. We also track how many per arrest, you know. So if an officer has... all of his use of force reviews are legitimate, but we notice that officer's having a lot more than the average officer. And then we start to ask, why is that? Is there something we can help him with his mindset? Or is there a tool he could be using in communicating before that? And we've had to coach some officers to do that. So, it goes beyond just was that one use of force justified or not. Those are almost always yes. But as we look at the big pictures, what can we do to reduce those when we need it at times?
Right. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Principle 5 says to seek and preserve public favor, not by pandering to public opinion, but by constantly demonstrating absolute impartial service to law. We talked about that, right? That impartiality. In complete independence of policy and without regard to the justice or injustice of the substance of individual laws, by ready offering of individual service and friendship. Remember, these were written in 1829. So to all members of the public without regard to their wealth or social standing. By ready exercise of courtesy and friendly good humor, and by ready offering of individual sacrifice in protecting and preserving life. And that, you know, that boils down to the fact that we talked about the impartiality. We don't, your status in the community doesn't impact our decision on what action we take with you regarding whatever reason we're encountering you. It's based on the severity and totality of the circumstances surrounding that. It's not who you are. It's what occurred.
Okay.
Principle 6, to use physical force only when the exercise of persuasion, advice, and warning is found to be insufficient to obtain public cooperation to an extent necessary to secure observance of law and to restore order, and to use only the minimum degree of physical force which is necessary in any particular occasion for achieving a police objective. I kind of touched on that earlier, and it kind of boils down to that, you know, that other principle just a minute ago. Principle 7, to maintain at all times a relationship with the public that gives reality to the historic tradition that the police are the public and the public are the police. It's kind of talking about that cooperative effort, right?
Right.
The police being only members of the public who are paid to give full-time attention to their duties, which are incumbent on every citizen in the interest of community welfare and existence.
Mm-hmm.
Principle 8, to recognize always the need for strict adherence to police executive function and to refrain from even seeming to usurp the powers of the judiciary of avenging individuals or the state and of authoritatively judging guilt and punishing the guilty. That's not our job. We look at the circumstances that occurred and we are enforcement of laws. We do not hand down punishment. We do not make a determination of guilt or innocence. Our job is just to gather and obtain facts, put those facts together in a report or evidence, gather evidence, and present that to the appropriate Justice Department for that.
Okay.
And the last one, and then we talked about this at the very start as well, is the test of police efficiency is the absence of crime and disorder, not the visible evidence of police action in dealing with it. I like the fact that I've heard comments before. You still see it, and I've debunked it many times on here, that Sheridan has more police officers than Billings, Montana. Yeah, that's said quite often.
Right.
I've seen it on social media. I've heard it before social media was a thing.
Other communities.
Billings has 169 officers, and we currently have 26 that are actually functioning as police officers, and only 20 that are in uniform.
Right.
But they're out there being active and being visible. And I actually enjoy it when I hear that. I laugh about it. I used to get frustrated, and now I just kind of laugh and shake my head. I'm like, well, that's good. I'm glad you think that. But that's not reality.
How safe do you feel?
Exactly. Yeah. And when anybody that's going to complain about that probably don't want to see us anyway.
Right. So these principles, even though they're 200 some odd years old or close to it, we'll round up, these are still things that are pertinent today.
Yeah, I'll even add, we have two young officers we just hired that seem to have the right stuff to be Sheridan police officers. We're really excited about. They're actually, today is day two of their field training. And as we speak right now, they're in the middle of a 4-hour class on these principles on our foundation. So we it's not just speech, you know. Yeah, it's this is fundamental to who we want to be.
Part of their training.
Yes, right from the get-go, they're getting this.
Gotcha. All right. Interesting. Interesting stuff. Thank you so much.
We're out of time,
gentlemen. I wish we had more time, but unfortunately we don't. Joining me this morning on part one, Lieutenant Daniel Keller and Chief Travis Koltiska with the Sheridan Police Department. Thanks again, gentlemen, for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be back with part two on today's Public Pulse program right after this.
You're on the go, and so should your banking.
At First Federal Bank and Trust, you can open personal checking and savings accounts anytime, online or on the First Federal app.
It's banking on your time wherever you are.
Plus, we're celebrating 90 years of community commitment, proudly serving Sheridan and the people who make it great.
Banking made easy with the community at heart.
Visit efirstfederal.bank to get started today. First Federal Bank and Trust, 90 years strong, member FDIC.
Face it, you don't want to do your own plumbing and heating work or repair. You need a professional, and that is exactly what you will get if you work with Wrap Plumbing and Heating. Being fully licensed, bonded, and insured, you can rest assured that they will take care of your repairs and maintenance in the very best way possible. Call Wrap Plumbing and Heating at 429-1196 and rest easy knowing it'll be done right. This is Dan Rapp with Wrap Plumbing and Heating. And as we like to say, if you find a leak, let me take a peek.
It's that time of year, Wyoming. Rally Week is here, and with that comes an influx in motorcycle traffic across the state and region, especially on Wyoming Wednesday when over 20,000 motorcyclists depart Sturgis and head to Devil's Tower and Hewlett for Ham and Jam and then on to Sundance for the burnouts that day. It's up to all of us to keep each other safe. Whether you're on four wheels or two, keep your eyes on the road, obey posted speed limits, put that cell phone down, buckle up, and drive sober.
A reminder from YDOT, paid for by Highway Safety Funds.
This is the story of Jack and the Beanstalk, which Jack climbed all the way to a giant's castle. But Jack had whooping cough, which he gave to the giant. The giant coughed so hard it blew Jack right out the window. The end. Without vaccines, our stories wouldn't be the same. Thank a vaccine. Are your kids up to date? Learn more at immunizewyoming.com.
Branded with quality, Shipton's Bigger.
Whether you're in the saddle or out on the town, take advantage of this special offer from Shipton's Big R and Ariat. Buy one pair of Ariat jeans and get one pair at 50% off. Ariat denim is expertly constructed from the inside out. You'll know they're the right jeans the moment you put them on. Men's, ladies, kids, we have you covered with the comfortable feel of Ariat denim at Shipton's Big R, offering the largest, most complete selection of Ariat with a fit and finish for every body. And now, through August 24th, you'll receive a great deal when you buy two pairs of Ariat jeans. Work, FR, and rebar styles are not included in this offer. Ariat denim is available right now at Shipton's Big R on Sugarland Drive in Sheridan.
Branded with quality, Shipton's Big R.
This public service message is presented by BHJ Property Management at 101 South Main.
Follow in the footsteps, hoof prints, and stagecoach tracks of history while enjoying fresh air and fun outside on Sheridan Community Land Trust's History on the Soldier Ridge Trail walking tour. Enjoy this tour on the ground and virtually with the Travel Stories GPS app. Find this in all of Sheridan Community Land Trust's driving and walking tours under the History tab at SheridanCLT.org.
Welcome back to Public Pulse, 930 AM K and also 103.9 FM KROE. Aaron Palmer filling in for Floyd Whiting. And joining me on part two of today's program is Johnson County Commission Chairman Bill Novotny, if I can speak. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning. It's good to talk to you, Aaron.
How are you? I haven't seen you in a month of Sundays.
I know. We missed seeing you on Tuesdays, but you've got another date.
Yes, I do. I got another thing that I have to do, but there's a lot of stuff going on in Johnson County. You guys just finished your budget. Exactly, I'm not sure what you want to talk about, but I wanted to talk about that real quick. Just the budget was almost $40 million this year?
Well, the operating budget is actually closer to 16.
Okay.
But, you, of course, then you budget in the county road fund, the other various reserve accounts, whether it's the Lake Desmet reserve. So the number looks larger than it actually is, but we're able to provide a lot of critical services to the people of Johnson County. And then also the folks that travel through Johnson County, for about 16 million.
Okay. Gotcha. And there's, I think when I was looking at the budget, there's a lot of grants that you guys also handle for different entities in the county. So that adds into the public budget as well. So lots of stuff.
It does. Okay. And, you know, Aaron, some of those are state grants. Some of those are federal grants. Those are all usually very, very specific and tailored to a particular thing, either that we're mandated by state or federal law to do, or it's whether it's problem gaming or opioid settlement money, those things where we're trying to address problems that we're seeing in our communities.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, Bill, I'm sure you've got a list of things that you want to touch on to pass on to the public, so I'll let you just get on with that. What would you like to talk about this morning?
Well, I want to just update everybody on a couple of great things that are underway with Johnston County's Road and Bridge Department.
Okay.
The first is that North Access.
Oh, yeah.
And so the pipe is in, and they're going to continue to do the dirt work around there, which is going to do a couple of things. It's going to enable better access down to the beach along Lake DeSmit, level that area out so that when we can open that gate and make it available to public, there's more areas to park. The Wyoming Game and Fish has selected a contractor that's designing the boat ramp right now, as well as the comfort stations. And so we're hoping that can get underway next year. But that area, as soon as our work is done, will be open and available to the public to use, and we're just really, really pleased with that. What's nice, that's a project that didn't cost the taxpayers anything. That was paid for with some settlement money and also a grant from the Game and Fish. So that's very positive. The other positive thing is the bridge that Johnston County owned on Crazy Woman Canyon Road is done. And so we're now waiting on the Forest Service to get their bridge done. They're waiting on some decking to finish that out. And when that's done, you could see Crazy Woman Canyon open back up, hopefully well in advance of those fall colors or at the latest for those fall colors. So really very promising developments there on both of those projects moving forward.
The Crazy Woman Canyon project, that was that expected to get done this year? Or is it ahead of schedule or what?
It actually, in the scheme of things, is being... because we were able to have the same contractor won the bid for the county bridge that also won the bid for the Forest Service bridge, it is happening more quickly and we're going to have less closure. This could have actually stretched into next year if you would have had to have one contractor in there, finish, demobilize, next contractor come in, mobilize, replace that bridge, demobilize. So by having that, it was a savings for both entities and gets the job done more quickly.
Okay, that was my impression. I thought it was going to be late fall or next spring before it was open. So that's great news. People have been talking about that all summer. What do you mean Crazy Woman Canyon's closed? Well, you know, it's everybody knew it was coming for quite a few years. But yeah, once it happens, everybody panics. But that's great news that it's happening earlier than anticipated. Good. And the access on Lake DeSmet, I everybody that uses that lake for whatever reason has been chomping at the bit, so to speak, wanting another access in there, and now we're going to get one. Perfect.
It is, and you know, our hope is that if you can spread more of the boaters out, particularly folks that are coming down from Sheridan, if they'll use that Piney Creek exit and then put in there, hopefully that'll take some pressure off the monument and also Mike Slapot, so just we can give a better outdoor rec experience for everybody and make sure that they enjoy that wonderful public access and also that asset because that's owned by the people of Johnston County.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously the more boat ramps you have, the less, you know, bottleneck you're going to have at the existing ones. So, yeah, makes sense. All right. Bill, one of the things I looked at the agenda from yesterday's meeting, which I didn't get a chance to listen to, but I looked at the agenda. The memorandum of understanding between Johnston County and the BLM on the environmental assessment, that's been a big thing for months. You guys have been talking about it off and on. What happened with that? What's going on with that?
Aaron, this is going to be the redraft of the Buffalo Resource Management Plan. This is basically when the previous administration prohibited any future coal leasing in the Powder River Basin, they're going to redraft that portion of the resource management plan. And so this is huge. This is a wonderful step forward, not only for the jobs in this area, but also base load power for our country. We need that clean burning natural coal that comes out of the ground that is low sulfur, that then can help generate electricity to power all these new data centers, and also make sure that we don't deal with rolling brownouts and blackouts just because it gets a little warm today and you want to turn on your air conditioning.
Right.
So it's going to be a long process to rewrite that. There'll be plenty of opportunities for the public to participate through the comment process. I'm sure it's going to end up getting litigated, but it's just that first positive step forward in getting rid of that disastrous policy from the previous administration.
Well, at least they're looking at it. There was one point where it looked like the decision was made and it was done.
So it really was.
Okay. So now they're at least looking at it going, well, let's look at this again.
And that's what is great about that process, and your county government being able to serve as a cooperator in those processes so that we can make sure that the socioeconomic concerns as well as the lifestyle and other issues that are impacted by those federal natural resource decisions are taken into consideration.
Well, one thing that people, I think, in general are not aware of is that you have your finger on the heartbeat on all these things. And you're aware of what's going on. When something looks like it's getting a little shady or hinky or whatever, you're the first one to stand up and go, whoa, wait a minute here. We need to do something with this. So that's one thing that people in Johnson County needed to be aware of, is that you're very aware of what's going on with these things. So thank you.
Well, and I appreciate that. And that's the, when you're a public lands county like we are, like Sheridan, Campbell, all of our neighbors are, you really have to pay attention to what the federal government is doing, and whether it's making sure that we're trying to prevent catastrophic wildfire in the Bighorns, making sure that there's recreational opportunities, that we've got the assets we need to, involved in this search that's underway on Cloud Peak. So you really do your best to keep your thumb on the pulse.
Okay. Have you heard the latest on that search up there at Cloud Peak?
So I got a brief from Sheriff Odenbaugh yesterday morning, and I have not heard anything today. I know Bighorn was looking at doing some additional flying, again, weather permitting, and they had scheduled to, I think, take some additional dogs. And so they continue to try to locate that gentleman, and you hope for the best, but you also fear the worst.
Right. Right, and it's been a while. It's been a few days, so every day that passes is not good news. So, all right. Bill, just a quick question. The federal government was looking at, and they may still be, selling off all of our wildlands here in the West, or not all of them, but a huge chunk of them. Where does that stand right now?
So, Aaron, at this point, Senator Lee has not brought the proposal forward in any other form. Obviously, the Senate's in recess for August right now. We do anticipate that is going to come back around. And certainly, in conversations I've had with our federal delegation, if there's a problem in the process to dispose of isolated parcels or parcels that the federal government no longer needs or that could serve another public benefit, then let's fix that process, but let's not give a blank check to sell a million of your acres. And as they amended that proposal during budget reconciliation, then they said, oh, it's just going to be BLM land. Well, what was concerning to me, the first parcel that you could have nominated outside of Buffalo under that would have been Mosier Gulch. And it wouldn't be converted into affordable housing. You would have had a billionaire come in, buy that, put a gate up, and suddenly that would be their private sanctuary. And that's not what we want. We can address our housing issues in a thoughtful way, but it's not by selling off our public lands.
No. Any of us that use that area, if you go up there at any point in the summertime, you can see just loads of people using that Mosier Gulch Trail up and down that whole canyon up there. And I just can't imagine that not being available to the public.
And that's scary. And, you know, if there's a piece of federal ground that's contiguous to a city, then let's talk about that. Because that's a lot easier to get services to, whether it's sewer, water, electricity.
Right.
But can you imagine trying to figure out a parcel that is 5 miles away from a population center? Because that's how big of a ring they drew under this proposal. So 5 miles out, you could nominate a parcel, and then we would have to figure out how to get sewer, water, power, all of those essential services, plus provide law enforcement, ambulance, fire. That's a real cost and burden to your local government.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I don't think this was well thought out, to be honest with you.
I think it was an approach that was trying to look at some specific problems they have in Utah and Nevada. And certainly I think that's one of the reasons why Montana was carved out of it. And I'm not in favor of carving Wyoming out and then say, okay, it's go ahead. Because I like to visit other states and enjoy public lands there,
right,
too.
Right.
But if there's a problem around Las Vegas, or there's a problem around Salt Lake City, or just a specific area, then let's address that individually. Let's not do a blanket policy that could be used again and again to take away your and my right to enjoy our public lands.
Yeah, and people in New Hampshire and Virginia couldn't care less about what affects us here in Wyoming. They couldn't.
But I guarantee you, when they come out to visit Yellowstone and they're driving across I-25 or I-90, they want to see and have that opportunity to stop in the Bighorn.
Right.
And if there's a big no trespassing sign all along the Cloud Peak Skyway, they are going to pay attention.
After the fact.
Yes, always right. After the fact.
Oh, of course, yeah. I didn't see this coming. Well, you should have. Yeah, no kidding. Okay, well, that's interesting. So we're not out of the woods with this yet, but it's on, for lack of a better term, on hold right now. And then it may come back up at some point, maybe this fall. So we still need to be aware of it. And what can we do? Can we write letters to our congressional delegation? What can the average person do to kind of speak their mind?
Absolutely, right there. You nailed it. Stay engaged with the congressional delegation, the governor, even our own state representatives, because we may see a push to take federal lands and turn it over to the state, and that always comes with cost. So we got to be wary of some of those things. So, yes, stay engaged, comment. When they're doing town halls in our communities, show up, be respectful, but share your opinion.
Okay, very good. Okay, Bill, those are the questions I had. What have you got that you want to throw in there before we wrap things up?
Well, you know, Aaron, we just completed a wonderful Johnson County Fair and Rodeo. Mm-hmm. It was the 140th.
Wow.
We have the longest operating county fair in the state of Wyoming.
I did not know that. Huh.
You know, that goes back, I think, almost like statehood or pre-statehood, which was pretty incredible.
No,
so we're
kidding.
Real proud of that. You know, we had a fantastic junior livestock sale, raised over $600,000 that is essentially scholarship money for those kids. You know, getting into August, it's still going to be a great summer. We've got Saturdays in the Square coming up over here. Lots of really good things. Lots of great opportunities to get out and enjoy Johnson County's wonderful recreational opportunities. So, and then on the 18th, we're going to send the kids back to school. So
already
a couple more weeks. Yeah, hard to believe. A couple more weeks to enjoy summer, and then it's going to be fall, and we'll be ready to watch the Bison play football.
Yeah, again. Again, very good. Also, keep in mind that our Johnson County Mike Solpots Recreation Area is still open for camping through, I think, what, September?
You know, we actually have even some people that camp out there later. We really don't shut it down. You just lose the camp host, and they don't clean the facilities as often. But, yes, please get out and enjoy Mike's Papat's. That's a wonderful recreational opportunity. And what's so great about that, again, that is entirely supported by the camping fees out there. So it doesn't cost the taxpayers anything. It's pay as you use. We actually even turn a little bit of a profit on that each year that then goes into a reserve that we save for major projects like the well that is doing the drip system and would allow us, if we had to have a boat wash station, to prevent aquatic invasive mussels out there. So just a great, great facility. That's not wouldn't be possible without the great work that our folks at Road and Bridge do. Scott and his folks are fantastic. Yeah. And also, we've got great business partners. Blakeman Propane, the Lions Club. A lot of people invest in that because they see just how amazing it is.
Bill, it's amazing. I remember back in the day when that was just dirt, and we all brought our campers or tents or whatever and just parked willy-nilly and just camped out there wherever you could. And to see how that facility has improved just in the last 25 years since I've been back, It's amazing that you guys have been able to do that, and every year you go out there and there's some new thing that you guys have done. The campgrounds are expanded out there, clear over onto that far, you know, south side. It's just crazy. It's a very nice facility, very nice.
It is, and I'm glad you use it, Aaron, because that's what it's there for. And as we look at demand, I think we've expanded the parking area for boats and trailers like three times. Since I've been a commissioner. So we'll keep doing our best to fit. You know, we have limited footprint there, and we'll do everything we can to make it as nice as possible and put it to good public use.
Very good. Good to hear. That's Bill Novotny. He is the commission chairman at the Johnson County Commission. Thank you, Bill, for joining us. And that's a wrap for today. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right. Talk to you later.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to Volunteers of America.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit eFirstFederal.bank, member FDIC.
Warmer weather means it's officially roofing season, and Branded 307 is getting to work. If your home was hit by the hail last year and you haven't had your roof inspected, now is the time. Most insurance companies only allow for 1 year from the date of loss to file a claim. After that, the cost could be out of your pocket. Whether you're looking to replace your shingles or want to upgrade to an impact-resistant metal roof, visit Branded307.com or call for your inspection today. Branded 307, branding one home at a time.
Fall is just around the corner, which means it's clearance time at Mossholders Design Center. Mossholders has clearance priced a number of items throughout its 18,000 square foot showroom. Save 20, 30, even 40% off of end tables, sofas, chairs, and recliners. Several rugs, lamps, and other accessories have also received clearance pricing. Many of these specials are one-of-a-kind items, so shop early for the best selection. That's Mossholders' end-of-summer clearance sale going on now. Mossholders, furniture is our passion.
Hi, this is Brad at Primate Motors, and let me tell you, partnering with Sheridan Media and the Country Bounty has delivered proven results time and time again. Our Sheridan Media guide keeps our message fresh, and his reliable customer service means we're never left hanging. If you're looking to move inventory or grow your brand, I say saddle up with the best. Sheridan Media Radio and the Country Bounty. The proof's in the pavement, and that's the result.